DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I do truly feel like we're shot out of a cannon today. Now, I know I sort of talk like I'm shot out of a cannon every single day, but today is truly one of those days where I think the energy is going to be at a fever pitch all day long. And over the course of our time, I mean, obviously, we got a lot to do here. We're going to cram everything we can into our next hour and try to do as much as possible to get you ready for the big one tomorrow. The road to Atlanta culminating there with Georgia and Alabama in the SEC championship game. We'll also tell you about everything we've got planned over the next couple of days as well. A lot on the game, but let me begin with this, a recruiting wrinkle that involves the SEC championship. I thought some of y'all would get a kick out of this. Five-star wide receiver Jaden Hazelwood, who we have talked about on this program a lot. I'd imagine in the weeks ahead, whether Georgia wins or loses the SEC championship on Saturday, my guess is we'll be talking a lot about Hazelwood indeed then as he gets ready to make his decision on January 4th. Well, maybe, possibly, a bit of a foreshadowing, a precursor to that announcement of either recommitting to Georgia or deciding to go to a different school. If you're a Georgia fan, you probably feel good about what Hazelwood has tweeted in the last 24 hours or so. Let me show you this on the screen for those of you who are watching. If you are listening, radio or podcast, I'll give you a chance to hear this. Jaden Hazelwood apparently pledging his allegiance to Georgia for this game. He says, hashtag go dogs. I'm rooting for Georgia to win the SEC championship. Now, you should know that this is one of those, I guess, promotional things that Twitter has done. I guess you click the link and it sends the tweet out for you. So, you know, Hazelwood didn't make this graphic if you're watching it on video. I guess that's part of the promotional. But I do take some interest in the fact that Hazelwood says that he's going to be cheering for Georgia on Saturday. First of all, we would all say we'll take as much as we can get on the Georgia bandwagon, as many good vibes as possible heading towards downtown Atlanta tomorrow. I think we're okay and good kind of with all of that. But I also take a little bit of intrigue in the fact that Hazelwood goes public to say he's rooting for Georgia in light of a couple of things that he said recently. Let me give you an example. Hazelwood talked to Jeff Sintel within the last few days, and of course he was supposed to initially take that official visit for the Georgia Tech game. That didn't happen. Hazelwood did recently update his visit plans. Here is what Hazelwood told Jeff Sintel, as you heard on Before the Hedges on Wednesday. Here's Hazelwood.
I'll probably be there, go to UGA in December to take my official.
Well, you think you'll probably reschedule it to December?
Mm-hmm.
You got a couple weekends left, I guess, in December, right?
Yeah.
You don't know which one it's going to be yet?
No. I ain't even got a top five.
No, I mean, like, which week?
Oh,
which
no,
week?
I think December 15th.
December 15th, that's mm-hmm. the one, that's the last weekend you can take before the early period?
Yeah.
Who's all in it? Make sure we get them all.
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I only have a top five.
It's stressful
now.
Is Tennessee coming in late? Who all's coming in late?
Tennessee in there? Yeah.
So keep up with the circumstantial evidence here. Hazelwood says, it's stressful. I don't even have a top five. But he also tweets out that he's cheering for Georgia and he's coming to Georgia for that final official visit weekend before the early signing period takes place. I connect those together as good news, especially in light of what Hazelwood's also said recently a couple times about not really paying that close attention right now to Georgia, maybe not watching that much college football altogether. Hazelwood once again told Jeff a few days ago, we'll have Jeff on for more of this later on, that, you know what, he hasn't really seen a lot of the Georgia offense, but he did notice at least one thing, the big bomb that Justin Fields threw to Mecole Hardman against UMass. Here's more of Hazelwood in light of what he's tweeted in the last day.
Have you been paying attention to the state school throwing the ball around a little more? How do you feel about what Georgia's doing? How do you feel about that?
Yeah,
fit, right?
They've been throwing it a little bit more. I ain't really been watching them, but I've been seeing stuff on Twitter. So that's really it.
What about Justin? Did you see his highlights?
He threw a bomb to Mecole, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen that.
What's left for you and them? What do you need to see? What, like, if you were going to take the official this weekend, what would that have done for you?
I
want
to see how everybody getting used. Everybody got a way of being used, so I'm trying to compare myself to see what they have and see how you're getting used.
So that's obviously understandable that Hazelwood wants to see how Georgia would use him, and no doubt watching how this Georgia offense attacks Alabama on Saturday, I would imagine for Hazelwood that would be kind of a curious thing to pay attention to. Now, let me wrap up the Hazelwood portion of our conversation by saying this. I would never try to pretend to you that a Hazelwood tweet, that's essentially just a promotional tweet, is somehow an indication that he is indeed going to choose Georgia when he makes his announcement early January. I'm not going to tell you that, but I have been telling you for a while that I did think Hazelwood would probably eventually gravitate back towards Georgia, partially because I think you can look at a process of elimination with some of the other schools he's been rumored to be considering. a lot of those schools are dealing with their own share of turmoil right now. Georgia, by comparison, is just in a lot better shape. But fair and balanced, in an effort of being at a, you know, all information released, it is worth pointing out, once again, in this same conversation with Hazelwood and Jeff Sintel, you know, Jaden tells Jeff that he's really nowhere close to making his ultimate decision. One more clip from Hazelwood.
Question everybody wants to know. Describe where you're at. Just what do you think? Is this
clueless right now?
Clueless, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he says he's clueless. He doesn't know. But I think we'll take it as good news that Hazelwood's at least tuning in, paying attention to the SEC championships on Saturday, and he's rooting for the Dogs. Let me shift gears here and get back to the game at hand on Saturday. And, you know, we were at Marlowe's Tavern last night in Brookhaven. We had a great time. We had a huge crowd there, and it was so much fun to talk to so many of the Georgia fans and get their mindset about how they feel going into the game on Saturday against Alabama. Now, I get a chance to do this in a digital sense with our comment section every day, but it's that face-to-face conversation. When you look someone in the eye and you listen to their thoughts in the game, when you really get, I think, a collective insight into how Dog Nation really feels going into this. And I think it's really interesting how many people seem to mirror the way that I feel, that this is a game that Georgia has a chance to win. But it's obviously by no means a guarantee, and I hope that you know I have enough respect for your intelligence and for your fandom and your understanding of college football. I would never sit here at this desk in front of this microphone and tell you this is definitely going to happen. You know, that you know, this is Georgia going to walk in that stadium and come out back-to-back SEC champions. What I've told you all week long is that I think it could happen. And one of the reasons why we've kind of rung the bell of Underdog Nation daily is because I do believe the doubt that exists around Georgia, for instance, all the ESPN pundits all lined up and picked Alabama to win this game. I do think that's the potential fuel. But there is obviously justifiable reason for confidence in Alabama. This is the number one team in the country. This is the team that has, you know, really been a juggernaut all season long. And it is going to be a load for a Georgia to deal with on Saturday. But to make you feel better about it, maybe, I'm going to write more about this at dognation.com later on today in my by the numbers piece. But to, you know, to make you feel better about it, I do think it's important to reflect on just how far Georgia has come since September, and just how well Kirby Smart paid off on a promise that he made actually almost a full calendar year ago. I mean, there was dejection after Georgia lost the national championship game. There were frustrating calls by officials that Georgia fans, I think, are still mad about. There were, you know, moments of breakdown by the team itself that, you know, listen, Alabama has mocked that second 26 thing as much as any of us can stand, whether it be the $1 million band, which is what their marching band's called, or, you know, their fans, the media. I mean, that entire state has, you know, rubbed second 26 in the face of Georgians for almost a full year now. But quietly, at the end of that game a year ago, when the Georgia locker room was admittedly a pretty somber place to be, Kirby Smart taking a few minutes to speak to reporters. You know, he made a promise then that I think is relevant here today, because there were a lot of people who did not think that Georgia would be back in this position the way that it is right now. Doubters going into this game on Saturday against Alabama, for sure. But there were doubters in August as well. Oh, you can't replace Nick Chubb. You can't replace Sony Michel. You can't replace Roquan Smith. This team's going to go 9-3. This team's going to go 10-2. This team's going to play in, you know, one of those Florida bowls on, you know, January the 1st or whatever date they are. This is not a team back in the mix for the college football playoff in 2018. Well, Kirby Smart had a message for those folks last year. And as Georgia gets ready to try to once again prove some critics wrong on Saturday, I think this message is relevant once again. Let's listen to Kirby Smart from January.
You know, I can't say enough about the remarkable senior class. These two young men sitting next to me, they meant more to Georgia than yards. A lot of heart and soul, a lot of fire. Sony Michel came over and talked to the group several times during the game, inspired those guys. But in overtime, we didn't finish when we had to, and Alabama did. And to give them credit, but I think everybody can see that Georgia's going to be a force to be reckoned with. I'm very proud of this team and this university, and we're not going anywhere.
As I've said, I can't promise you Georgia's going to win this game on Saturday. It is a stiff challenge. But I can promise you this. Kirby Smart saying what he said in January gives him a lot of credibility to stand in front of this team in that locker room before kickoff tomorrow. And in that quiet moment when everyone's got little butterflies in their stomach and everyone's really focused in on the task at hand, Kirby Smart gets to look at those guys and say, hey, I believed in you before this season began. I told all these people back in January that we're not going anywhere. And here we are, back in the same stadium, in the same spot. It's an SEC championship as opposed to a national championship, but it's still likely the two best teams in the country playing each other head-to-head. I believed in you then. I still believe in you now. I think that message will resonate with these Georgia players. And I do think the faith that Kirby's shown in them, I think that'll matter come Saturday. Will it impact the final score? Will this go UGA's way? We'll have to wait and find that out. But I do know this. Alabama's going to get the best shot they've gotten from anybody all season long from Georgia tomorrow. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Underdog Nation Daily. No one seems to believe in the Dogs tomorrow. We're okay with that because we are the daily podcast of the fans of the two-touchdown underdog Georgia Bulldogs. I guess the point spread, and our buddy Eddie here on set has been showing this all week long. I guess it dipped below 13.5 down to 13 for a while, but then kind of jumped back up to a 13.5 again yesterday. A little bit of movement there. You can check that out, of course, more when you find my bookie online. But nonetheless, we are just rolling and ready to go for the game tomorrow for Georgia's chance of proving they truly aren't going anywhere. And they are hopefully ready to shock the world tomorrow. And obviously, we'll be having a great time with all of that. We really appreciate Marco's Pizza for bringing the show to you today. And obviously, Georgia is going to try to be a game changer tomorrow. And Marco's Pizza provides that game changer for dinner. Get ready to settle in and watch some football this weekend and get two medium, two-topping pizzas from Marco's for a great everyday value of just $6.99 each. You can order yours today at marcos.com. What a great way to kind of settle in and watch some football, including the big game tomorrow, with that great offer from Marco's Pizza. We will get Jeff Sintel coming up in just a couple of moments. We'll also talk about some of those playoff implications for Georgia in this game later on. I know we'll hear from a couple of experts on that front on our program here today, Underdog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Let me let you hear now, though, for a little more from Kirby Smart in terms of the mentality around this game and the actual X's and O's that it's going to take to win it. First of all, I think it's been really interesting how the media this week, and I was at both of these games, so the comparison's not lost on me. Back in 2008 and 2009, when Alabama was meeting Florida in SEC championships, and the premier team in the SEC in 2008 was the Florida Gators. Alabama gave them a game in the SEC championship, but Tim Tebow was too much. Florida goes on to win that and goes on to win the national championship. And our buddy Mike Johnson was on those teams. We'll talk to him more about this on Road to Atlanta Live, driven by Cadillac later on today. But he'll talk about the metamorphosis that occurred with the Alabama program over the course of that season from 2008 to 2009. By the time the teams met again in Atlanta that December, well, now it's Alabama who's the premier program in the SEC, and it was Florida who was pushed off the pedestal. Is this same thing potentially going to happen with a Georgia and Alabama this year? Alabama, the premier SEC program a year ago, at least by the tune of being reigning national champion. But is Georgia really about to move Alabama off of its perch? Well, a couple of things from Kirby Smart on that. First of all, he kind of balks at the comparison of the 2008-2009 Florida situation. And he says that Georgia is probably not as fixated on Alabama as some of us would maybe think. Here's Kirby Smart from earlier this week.
I wouldn't say in 2009 that our goal was to take down Florida. It was to take down whoever was in our path. I've never been around really good teams that are focused on other teams. The good teams I've been around are focusing on whoever they play that week, and it's really not been different for us this year. I mean, we've really tried to hone in on what we've got to do and what we got to do to get better, and our concern can't be with Bama all year. We wouldn't be here. It's a concern now because we've got to go play them. So we've got to go play a good football game. We've got to execute. We've got to do a good job in order to play one of the best teams in the country. We've never looked at it as it's all about them or all about us. We just got to do a good job executing.
Speaking of concerns, Kirby Smart addresses those. The one concern that he's consistently mentioned this week is, as the offense has grown and gotten better over the last 5 weeks, he thinks the defense, and he's said this a lot, we've heard him on this program say this, is still very much a work in progress. Well, here we are just a couple days before the game, and for Kirby Smart, that fact still hasn't changed. Here's Kirby again.
I've commented all year, we're work in progress, and progress is about over. So it's season's coming to an end, and we're still in work in progress. We've got to show improvement, and we've got to change gears because, you know, what we did last week is nothing to do with what we're going to have to do this week. And when you look at the players and the players that played, I mean, we'll have different guys in the game. We'll have, you know, it's a different mode. It's completely different. So we'll have to get them ready to play, and that's our job as coaches to prepare these guys this week. And I'm certainly excited about the opportunity our guys have gotten to go cover what is one of the most elite group of skill players I've seen assembled in college football. And you look at the wideouts they've got a bunch of them, and they're really good. And then they got, you know, some toys they can do things with, and then they've got tight end. They got really good backs. So with all those things, we've got to play a really good football game, and our kids are excited for the opportunity.
I actually really like that audio from Kirby Smart. We've been growing to get better all season long, but the final exam is kind of tomorrow, at least in terms of the biggest test Georgia will probably face. And obviously, Kirby's well aware of the challenge on the other sideline. I think the defensive chess match here between Kirby and the offensive staff for Alabama, Mike Locksley, Dan Enos, I think that's going to be really interesting to watch. As far as the rest of the weekend, before we talk to Jeff Sintel, let's also give you an update on that right now with our Kroger checklist in terms of everything we've got going on over the course of the next couple of days. The next big broadcast for us today is at 5 p.m. as Road to Atlanta, driven by Cadillac, returns. We're going to be all over Atlanta today, kind of previewing the big game tomorrow, and we'll have that as a part of our Kroger checklist for you tomorrow, or I should say this afternoon, 5 p.m., Road to Atlanta, driven by Cadillac. We will see you here on the Dog Nation video channels for that. And then on Saturday, a lot of stuff. Of course, the Road to Atlanta tailgate gets going at 11 a.m. And yes, I know, right now the forecast is calling for a little bit of rain. But you know what? We're going to keep a good thought about that. And rain or shine, we're going to be there for our Road to Atlanta tailgate. So we're really excited about all of that starting 11 a.m. tomorrow. Road to Atlanta tailgate right there at the blue lot on Northside Drive. We really hope you'll come by and see us there for that. Then it's our Kroger kickoff with pregame coverage before the game on Saturday on the Dog Nation video channel. And, of course, the game itself at 4 p.m. And then immediately after the game, we'll be there for you for the Northside Hospital postgame coverage from all Georgia locker room, Georgia coaches, hopefully a celebration on the field. We'll bring that all to you as part of our Northside Hospital postgame coverage. By the way, the Kroger checklist brought to you by Kroger. Don't forget a couple of reminders from our friends at Kroger. Tomorrow is the last day to redeem your coupons at Kroger.com or on the Kroger app for savings on Tostitos chips, Johnsonville Italian sausage, and select games just in time for the holidays or the big game-watching party tomorrow. Also, don't forget about four times the fuel points on gift cards with the digital coupons at Kroger.com. That offer is valid now through December the 11th, so check that out. Great to have you with us here on Underdog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. We got more on this game and another look at the game now from our buddy Jeff Sintel. It is great to have you with us.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
We'll say hello to our buddy Jeff Sintel. And boy, Jeff, I'm sure you'll join me. What a great time it was last night at Marlowe's Tavern in Brookhaven. First of all, John Stinchcomb, the great former Georgia offensive lineman, is just a terrific voice with incredible insight on Georgia football. It is so much fun getting a chance to chop up this game with him. And I know, Jeff, you're like me. The chance to hear from a lot of Dog Nation face-to-face in person about how they're feeling about this game, different levels of confidence, different levels of anxiety, different theories on how best it gets done. It was really nice a couple nights before the kickoff takes place tomorrow to be able to talk to some Dog fans last night at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. I hope you had as much fun as I did.
Hey, Brent, I had a great time. Number one, I will echo your sentiment about John Stinchcomb. When everybody trots out that DGD label, I think sometimes it can get overused, but to me, the definition of a DGD, that a dog, is one that understands the game, one that understands the life before and both after the game. That Stinchcomb family, great athletes, great football players, but they're also steeped in the right values, especially academics, education, what's important for your life beyond football. And then we got to see guys like Bass and Dog. We got to see guys like, we got to see Miriam Martin Corbin. That's always great to see her. We saw Army Dog. And, you know, one of my favorite moments, Brandon, came when someone asked you if you were aware of the Tuscaloosa boxer Deontay Wilder also competing on Saturday night. And I thought that was an interesting response that generated out of you, sir.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. I'm looking for two folks from Tuscaloosa to be KO'd on Saturday. Mr. Wilder, who I don't care about one way or another, and Nick Saban as well. I'm hoping it's a pretty rough night for the folks in Tuscaloosa come Saturday night, Jeff.
See, guys, that's vintage BA. You get him at Marlowe's after he's had those tasty wings out there, and he starts he starts throwing a little swag out there, talking about not two knockouts he wants to see on Saturday night. Not just the one in the men's, but also he wants to see the Bronze Bomber go down as well.
Yeah, listen, I got no beef with Deontay Wilder, but when you realize he's from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, I'm not in favor of anything from Tuscaloosa these days, Jeff. At least for right now, anything from Tuscaloosa is a bad idea for me. And I think you probably understand where I'm coming from on that.
I'm sure you're going to vote for the – you probably would root for the underdog in the Deontay Wilder bout as well.
Yeah, that's probably exactly right. All right, let me talk to you about what we started our show with today. And you know, I can't ignore stuff like this. Jaden Hazelwood does tweet out some love for UGA. Obviously, Jeff, this tweet in itself, saying he's rooting for the Dogs against Alabama, is not indication that, you know, that's not an official commitment to Georgia. But I think for a lot of Georgia fans, given the fact that there had been a little bit of radio silence for a while and connecting this tweet to some of the things that Hazelwood told you a couple of days ago, I think that I am right there in the midst of a lot of the rest of Dog Nation to say, hey, it start to feel a little more optimistic about Hazelwood's chances of rejoining this 2019 class for Georgia in early January. And in terms of the bandwagon for the SEC championship, it doesn't hurt to have another name on that list, especially of the five-star variety. So to the extent that it is news, I guess it's good news, right?
Yeah, and I think what's interesting, and I hope everybody saw the development last night, which is going to be very – it's, you know, first of all, congratulations to the Atlanta United. I'm sure there are a lot of patrons of that great team that are on our show right now, but they're going to move the games at the Dome, the high school state championships at the Dome, and goodness gracious, the so far the history of the Georgia high school football state championships at that premier venue at the Benz are just not working out with last year's inclement weather and games getting moved. Well, now conflicts with the Atlanta Falcons on Sunday, conflicts with the Atlanta United next week. That's going to mean that the state championships moved to Tuesday and Wednesday. Imagine that. State championships in the middle of Atlanta traffic on Tuesday and Wednesday of next, you know, of state championship week. It's going to extend a little bit longer. And the reason why I brought that up is a guy like Jaden Hazelwood, they're in the semifinals tonight against Pierce County. And should they advance, which I feel they will, to the state championship game, it's going to be very tricky for him to take official visits or take any visits over the weekend because he's still going to be in state championship mode with games coming up the following week. And, again, I still think if Jaden doesn't take any more visits, he's not going to – he only has one official visit left. But if Jaden doesn't take any more official – any visits until his planned visit from December 13, 14, 15 to Athens for that weekend when everybody's going to be in town, combine that with the fact that there's really not a ascending strong contender in this race. And I think Georgia has just kind of been hanging around in this race for Jaden Hazelwood. And really, a lot of the things for Georgia, there's still a lot of positives in Georgia's corner. As many positives in Georgia's corner as any other suitor out there for him.
Yeah, I think you bring up a really good point. If all we'd heard from Hazelwood was, hey, I'm cheering for Georgia in the SEC championship, then that probably wouldn't mean a whole lot to me. But the fact that he says that only a couple of days after he told you that he is going to take that, official visit to UGA on the final official visit weekend, and your reporting also indicates that he may not be taking any more of those visits, when you start connecting all that together, listen, anything can happen in recruiting, and he won't officially make his announcement until early January, but you know, I'm sorry, Jeff, you know, I am a guy that reads between the lines, and that is a lot of circumstantial evidence, at least for right now, that seems to be on Georgia's side, and I continue to believe that Hazelwood's a true game changer for this 2019 class. I wish he was playing for Georgia tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, I totally agree with that. He's a unique skill set, but you know, like, we were kind of getting into the weeds a little bit at Marlowe's yesterday. Well, you know, Georgia's coaches were in home talking to Jaden Hazelwood last night. Okay. My information tells me that that's the only visit that he's welcomed so far this week. That's the only school, according to my sources, that's been in home with Jaden so far this week as well. So that's obviously another sign for Georgia that things are definitely not going in the wrong direction, let's say that. And, you know, the other thing there with Georgia and the matchup with Alabama, I think win or lose for the Bulldogs, and I'm not even talking about the possibility of talented guys like Riley Ridley or Mecole Hardman thinking about the draft, much less the graduation of Terry Godwin, which would potentially open up even more competition in the receiver corps for Georgia. But I would think this would be a pretty good example of maybe how necessary or how necessary a guy like Jaden Hazelwood would be for the Bulldog offense, because I think Alabama has three or four receivers that are already that type of pro player potential as well. And I think Georgia needs to have more guys like Jaden Hazelwood, more guys like Jerry Jeudy, more guys like Henry Ruggs, more guys like Waddell, in order to win those 15-round fights with a true defending national champion like Alabama.
Well, speaking of the game against Alabama, we'll talk more about that coming up with Jeff Sintel. Right now, though, let me remind you that if you can't be in the stadium tomorrow, if you're all around the country, wherever Dog Nation spreads out, there's really nothing quite like cheering on the Dogs with one of those local alumni chapters from the University of Georgia. A gathering like that, for you, is never far away. It's led by passionate volunteers. The alumni chapters keep you connected to your fellow Bulldogs through meaningful events and charitable opportunities. A lot of things going on, like there's game-watching parties, there are dog days of service, there are professional like networking events, philanthropic chances for you to get involved there with other UGA grads. It's really a really cool thing to do because there are 318,000 active alumni, kind of divided among 83 different chapters of the Alumni Association. And it's really all over the world, and when you have that going on, I love this phrase from the Alumni Association. As they say, you never bark alone. So if you want to get connected to the UGA Alumni Association and your local chapter wherever you live, the website to go to, and please write this down, alumni.uga.edu/chapters. That's alumni.uga.edu/chapters. I love hearing from folks on this show who live in big cities, New York, San Francisco, LA, Dallas, and Detroit. You know, they always talk about, you know, where they go and hang out with other Georgia folks to watch these games. I know a lot of folks doing that tomorrow, and the UGA Alumni Association will help you get connected with other UGA grads there in your area. All right, Jeff, let me get back to the game at hand on Saturday for a moment. I thought your piece at DogNation.com was certainly interesting, and I'd even take it a step further to say it's probably inspiring that when you look at Georgia's chances of pulling this upset on Saturday, and as we've called it this week, Underdog Nation Daily, one of the things the underdog kind of has going for it, there are a few underdogs in college football history who've been as talented as this Georgia roster is right now. And despite the fact that the world thinks Alabama's winning tomorrow, when it has come to elite recruits over the last few years, Georgia has certainly won its fair share of battles against Alabama, including really the knockout for the 2018 class, where Georgia cleaned up on elite recruits in a way that the Crimson Tide could not match. Now, overall, Alabama still has the slightly more talented roster, at least on just the composite basis. But if you're a UGA fan looking for grasping at any hope this week, Jeff, I mean, that's it, right? That from a talent standpoint, Georgia ain't that far behind.
Yeah, we did this one before the Hedges. Hope everybody caught that program where we looked at the ratio of elite prospects, and those are the guys that we call the 4- or 5-star variety. I find it was very interesting that Georgia only still slightly trails Alabama on that front with the amount of elite prospects they signed over the last 4 years. But to me, a key indicator is over the last 3 years. That's when some people could illustrate that that's when Kirby Smart came to town and started recruiting at a high level for Georgia. Over those past three classes, Georgia has signed 55 4- or 5-star prospects. Alabama has signed 55 4- or 5-star prospects. Georgia actually has the lead in the 5-star category by a 14-12 margin. And a lot of that stuff was equaled out after Georgia's great performance last year, knocking Alabama off the summit, so to speak, for the first time in 7 seasons. So Georgia's right there from a talent standpoint with Alabama. One thing also interesting, Brandon, that's just popping up right now over the course of this call is Brian Brzee has named his top six. He released that just a few minutes ago. He's named his top six, and obviously the normal contenders are in there, Ohio State, Penn State, Georgia. But the other three outside of that went Michigan, went Clemson, and went Alabama. So nation's number one overall junior, a 5-star strong side defensive end, to kind of keep on the topic and keep on the point of what we're talking about there, the type of guy Georgia needs in order to have its defensive line annually look like the ones in Tuscaloosa. Georgia has reached the top six status for Brian Bresee.
All right, that's a great update to provide us. Actually, as it happens, Bresee drops that in the midst of our conversation here. Jeff, thanks for bringing that to what we're discussing. I'll get back to Georgia-Alabama in just one moment, but I do want to ask you about that from Bresee. You mentioned the schools we expected to see, and obviously Georgia was one of those. Of that top six, is there anything that classifies as a true surprise for you? And I know that Bresee was, and correct my facts here if I'm wrong, was at the Auburn game, is that right? So I guess a quick two-part question. Reboot the conversation about Bresee's current relationship with Georgia, elite 2020 prospect, and the conversation for top 2020 prospect. Reboot the conversation about his relationship with Georgia, and do you view anything in his just-released top six as being a legitimate surprise?
Well, Brandon, I know this is going to make you it's going to be very misty in there in your studio when I tell you this, but he took a visit to Florida this season, and somehow the Gators did not crack his final six. And I'm sure it's a little misty in there. It must be a lot of sawdust or something in there around Eddie, but the Gators did not make his final six. To me, you know, just to kind of tee up the narrative on Bresee, he's been very, very interested in Georgia since last March. Last March, he took a visit, and he loved it so much, he planned a return trip for G-Day before he left. G-Day went great. He came down and visited Georgia again for the Auburn game. And, man, I'm going to tell you, every time he visits Georgia, to me, it seems like it's the type of visit necessary to maybe stack up three, four, five of those, the type of visit necessary to land the nation's number one overall prospect. Bresee feels very comfortable. The family feels extremely comfortable at Georgia. And I would think if he cuts down that list any further, don't know if he will or not, I would think that Georgia would survive the next cut down as well. That's how strongly that family and that young man feels about the Bulldogs. Just a special player, 6'5", 290, strong side defensive end. He would be one of those set-the-edges defensive ends. At that size, it's obvious to think that maybe he might grow into a dominating tackle since he's already that big. He comes from a tremendous gene pool. I mean, athletically, his father played linebacker at James Madison. His mother was a junior college All-American. He has another sister that's still playing college basketball right now. This is a guy that comes from a family full of athletes. And they really, really like what they've heard so far from Georgia.
That's really good reporting, Jeff. Thank you so much for bringing that to our program here today. I appreciate that. Let me, in the time we have left, go back to Georgia-Alabama for a moment. I want to really drill down on two key points here. And I guess in the first one, I want you to talk me off the ledge about something. Because, you know, I've been ringing the bell all week for Underdog Nation Daily. And I do truly believe that Georgia's got a chance. And that's what I'm willing to say. A chance to pull this upset on Saturday, and I do think the fact that no one believes in UGA is fuel that the team can use. However, here is where, as a fan, I'm going to speak as a fan here, here's where my anxiety comes in. I love your piece. I love your Centel Intel this week about how well Georgia has done in recruiting in comparison to Alabama as of late, especially those three recruiting cycles that Kirby Smart has brought in. I like the head-to-head wins that I believe that Georgia's going to get over Alabama for 2019. But what's frustrating for me, Jeff, is that I still feel like Georgia has to be, from a recruiting standpoint, virtually perfect to be able to go head-to-head on the field with Alabama. Because as statistically close as the 4- and 5-star ratio is for these two teams, let's face it, I'm just going to be as blunt as I can be here. The couple of places where Georgia still has 3-star-type talent are the couple of places where I do feel like Alabama is looking to exploit on Saturday. In other words, Georgia's got 4- and 5-star guys spread out all over the map on Saturday, and yet the couple of places where they don't are the places where Georgia seemingly, from a game plan standpoint, is the most vulnerable. So it's almost like it's great that Georgia's closed the gap this much. If they're playing anybody else tomorrow, I think it's almost a pretty assured win. And yet with Alabama, from a roster standpoint, you have got to be just about, you know, locked down, rock solid, perfect at every single roster spot, or Alabama's still going to have that slight edge. I mean, as a recruiting expert, how do you respond to that?
Yeah, I think the main thing, and this is kind of where we maybe carry this thought from maybe what I do for Dog Nation from recruiting and team side, and then it goes into the beat coverage by guys like Chip Towers and Mike Griffith. And what I mean by that is there's a point where all that recruiting is great, But then there comes a point where it's all about coaching, in-game adjustments, and also player development, which is very huge. You know, to me, this is not just Georgia trying to beat Alabama, the specter that, let's face it, they are a true college football dynasty. I mean, anybody that could ever replicate, I don't know if anybody can ever replicate what Nick Saban has done in college football over the last 10, 11 years. The two things about this Alabama team that I hope folks kind of have framed up in their field of vision here. Number one is Nick Saban has done this while having a revolving door, musical chairs of assistants. Look what he did over the last year. He's revamped his entire staff, new coordinators. He's got new key position coaches, a new special teams coordinator. And then you combine that with what they're doing, I think what they're doing with their quarterback and their receivers. I think Nick Saban has evolved from the team that would mash you into the ground, play keep away, play that New York Giants style, Bill Parcells style football, and just wear away these big offensive juggernauts. Well, now Alabama is the offensive juggernaut. Maybe the way Georgia beats them is to take care of some of those old Alabama-style tendencies of the past. Run the ball, play keep away, limit the possession. But I do think this Alabama team, this is what needs to be said here. You're not just beating Alabama. You're trying to beat an Alabama team that might go down as maybe one of the most stoutest Alabama teams of the Saban era. And I think that is the mountain that Georgia's facing tomorrow. The boys all have the proper motivation. They're going to be coached up. But at some point, it's going to come down to how Georgia's staff, and if you're looking for another edge, how Georgia's staff has been with these players and been with this team for more seasons, how they handle things compared to an Alabama staff. Let's face it, a lot of those guys, this is their first year. I mean, think about how Georgia would feel. Think of how you would feel, Brandon, next year, despite all the talent in the cupboard, if I told you next year Georgia has a new offensive and defensive coordinator, they have a new wide receivers coach, they have a new linebackers coach. I mean, there's been a lot of turnover for Alabama, and yet they're not only at the same standard, they're above the standard. I just think that, you know, we said this when we talked to all those great people at Marlowe's last night. I think the way you beat Alabama is you play one of those games that the New York Giants did against those great Buffalo Bills teams, or the way the Giants did against those great New England Patriots teams. And when you play that way, I think it plays into the hand of the best possible football this Georgia football team could play. So Georgia having to play that way is actually the overall strength of the team.
All right, let me finish up with this topic on that game in terms of how Georgia actually gets it done. And I read our Cover 4 piece at adognation.com, which is a fun thing to do, where we all kind of weigh in on a particular topic, and it's always kind of fun to see what the other Dog Nation folks think about something. And when it comes to Georgia's recipe for victory, Jeff, I have to admit I'm not quite sure I agree with your police work here. You talked about the comparison to Alabama-Florida in 2009, in which Alabama, in winning that game, you know, ran more plays, kind of controlled the clock, kept Tim Tebow on the sideline. And it seems like that would be the recipe against Alabama as well. Tua Tagovailoa, Freudian slip. Tua Tagovailoa can't beat you if he's on the sideline. But, Jeff, for me, obviously, I want Georgia to run the ball. Ken Blankenship was talking about that in our Facebook comment section a moment ago. Obviously, I want Georgia to run the football, but I don't believe from an offensive standpoint this is Georgia's job of, hey, control the clock and shorten the game, limit Alabama's opportunities. I think Georgia's biggest offensive challenge is matching point for point what Alabama does. In other words, strike fast if you can, but just make sure you score points. For me, I'm more interested in Georgia's ability to match Alabama point for point than I am Georgia's ability to keep the Alabama offense on the sideline. Now, obviously, it'd be great to do both, but we know Alabama's going to score. I mean, we just know they are, and we know they have an ability because of Tua's deep throws to score quickly. For me, the challenge here, Jeff, is not Georgia to control the clock, but for Georgia to ring up the scoreboard.
Yeah, you know, I want to get some quick interaction on one point you had a while back where you talked about the scattering of 4 and 5 stars is not thick enough in certain areas for you. And I guess you're probably talking about the defensive line there, right? You wish they were more 5 stars in the front. I mean, Jordan Davis is a 3-star that's already playing like a 5-star for Georgia. Is that what you mean there when Georgia doesn't have enough elite bodies in a certain spot? Are you thinking there, or are you thinking in the secondary?
I'm trying not to mention too many specific names, but let's just say that you are zeroing in on some of my concerns.
Yeah, and I gradually just did the flyby on those with positions and not names or whatever. And, you know, and I was talking about this with some fans because obviously we got into some deep game theory on that one last night at Marlowe's Tavern. But close your eyes for a second and think about this. Is it going to be any harder for Georgia to stop Tua Tagovailoa and for any harder for Georgia to score with Alabama and the Crimson Tide than it was last year for Georgia against Oklahoma and Baker Mayfield? Now, I know the defenses or offenses or systems are different. I know everything else is different, but the level and the rate at which both field general operates, finds the third guy, puts balls on guys, I think the degree of difficulty is very much the same. I think schemes are different, personnel are different, yada, 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 get all that. But still, I don't think it's going to be any harder for Georgia to score or to keep up or slow down a Tua than it was last year for the Heisman Trophy winner and that high-powered Oklahoma offense. And somehow Georgia found a way to do that. If you ask me, I think if the game approaches the 40s and the 50s, that's not the way Georgia wins the football game. And what I mean by maybe playing keep away is you limit Alabama to maybe 8 or 9 possessions, and maybe one of those is near the end of the half where they don't have time to go the entire length of the field, and you limit them with those non-explosive plays and making them operate in the red zone. I'd love to see how well Tua and Alabama operate in the red zone in this game. Because that's one thing that maybe they don't have a lot of practice at doing, and that's trying to, you know, score from when the field is short and it's easier to cover guys because there's only 20 yards of space to do so for that. That's a matchup I'd like to see. And then maybe, again, this is what you listen to NFL guys and NFL coordinators and NFL minds talk about it, and they talk about how with these elite teams with all the offenses and all the receivers and the expert quarterback play, the way the rules are with targeting and how you can't really hit players on the defensive side of the ball, you're probably better suited to turn teams over than getting a bunch of stops. I think if Georgia does limit Tua in Alabama to like 10, 11 possessions, maybe the winning formula would be is if they hold them to field goals. Alabama obviously can't kick field goals, but also if they get a combination of stops and turnovers, which means Alabama only scores on about 5 or 6 of those 11 possessions.
Jeff, it's all really interesting stuff. We appreciate your insight both on the on-field stuff for tomorrow and the recruiting stuff here as we're getting very close to the start of early signing period. Believe it or not, December is going to be an insane month around Dog Nation once again. Jeff, I'm looking forward to being in Atlanta with you tomorrow on our road to Atlanta as it culminates there for the big game. We'll see you at our road to Atlanta tailgate as a part of our Kroger kickoff coverage, the Northside Hospital post-game coverage after the game. Jeff, I'm hoping we have smiles on our faces, or at least me smiling from ear to ear. That's what my hope is. Either way, we'll look forward to seeing you then.
All right, everybody. I'll see you in the blue lot, everybody. And don't be a stranger on Saturday.
Sure thing.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Oh, my goodness, y'all. I am so ready for this game. I wish it hurry up and be here. I know you all feel the same way. We just got to wait a little bit longer, just a little bit longer. And I thought that Jeff Sintel made a really interesting point. I know that Kirby Smart pushed back on that a little bit this week. He said the Oklahoma offense last year in the Rose Bowl and the Alabama offense this year are completely different. It's not the same thing. Kirby Smart tried to say that. But I agree with Jeff's, at least the overall premise of his point of, hey, even if the overall offensive game plans for the two teams are different, the challenge of one is not that much easier than the challenge of the other. And Jeff's right about that. Stopping Oklahoma was hard. Georgia did that in the second half last year in the Rose Bowl. If they could do something like that again this year in the SEC Championship, then the outcome of this game is potentially drastically different. Here is the one thing, and I got to say this really, really quick because we got a lot to do. Here is the one thing, though, about stopping Oklahoma last year that I hope Georgia has on its side versus Alabama this year. Last year, Georgia had Roquan Smith, a really good space tackler. Last year, Georgia had the proven beef up front like a John Atkins. Now, I'm expecting big things from Jordan Davis tomorrow. But where I'm going with all this is that Georgia could have a chance of stopping the run with limited personnel. Georgia could play back in pass coverage and stop the run with just a few guys up front. On Saturday, tomorrow, that's a challenge for Georgia. All expectations are Monty Rice is not going to play, or at least there's a very good chance that Rice does not play. He is Georgia's best run-stopping linebacker. Jordan Davis is a true freshman in the interior of that defensive line trying to limit Alabama running the football. I know we say Tua, 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 Tua. We talk about Tua Tagovailoa all the time, but you can't just let Alabama run it when it wants to. Otherwise, this game is going to be over. just like Georgia almost got knocked out of the Rose Bowl in the first half because Anderson and Sermon for Oklahoma were getting off with the running game. You got to stop the run some, and you got to do it with a limited, small number of personnel. A couple defensive linemen, a couple linebackers. If Monty Rice does not play, that's harder for Georgia to do tomorrow. And obviously, having Roquan Smith in a game like this would be a real luxury. All right, SEC through. Let me quickly remind you about my friends at MyBookie. Find them online to get involved in the action this weekend. Simply look them up, MyBookie. Search MyBookie. Then use the promo code DOGNATION. And when you sign up this weekend to get going for the in-game wagering, the prop bets, the, you know, you can wait around for Sunday for the NFL, whatever it is. When you get signed up at MyBookie, your first deposit can be matched up to 50%. But you got to go right now. Use the promo code DOGNATION. Your first deposit can be matched up to 50%. But you got to go right now. MyBookie online, promo code DOGNATION. Then after that, you play, you win, and you get paid. All right, couple things here. We were just talking about Jeff with recruiting. There are a couple of interesting recruiting nuggets that are out there. In-state quarterbacks for 2020 are going to leave the state for their college careers. First of all, Max Johnson, the nephew of Mark Richt from Oconee County, he commits to LSU. I don't think Georgia was all that in it at the end on him, but he does choose LSU over some other schools. Johnson's going there for the class of 2020. Marietta's Harrison Bailey also commits to Tennessee. That's Jeremy Pruitt coming in here. Now, he's got Ramil Keaton for the class of 2019. That's a high school teammate for Harrison Bailey. So Pruitt coming in and getting Bailey for the class of 2020. So Georgia, I think, needs to get back in the quarterback business in a big way for 2020. And arguably two of the best in-state for the next cycle have now chosen other SEC schools. That'll be worth paying attention to in the future. I talked to you about the UGA Alumni Association a lot here on our program, and I thought they had a very funny series of tweets this week where they reached out to the other alumni associations for other SEC schools with a campaign they're calling hashtag dog for a day. I think this is really funny. I think we have the one they sent to the Florida Alumni Association. They say, look, we've said a lot of things to each other over the years, but at least we never made Tim Tebow cry, which I think is kind of a funny backhanded compliment. Cheer for revenge against Bama, and come be a hashtag dog for a day with kind of a funny graphic. It says beat Bama, and the Florida helmet's been kind of put a red hue over that. I actually think that's really funny. I think that's a good job by the Alumni Association for doing that. I mentioned Tennessee a moment ago. Let me give you a couple of interesting notes that are at least partially related to Tennessee. First of all, Jim McElwain at one point in time had been rumored to potentially be in the mix as the next Tennessee offensive coordinator. There had been some online chatter about that. He's the current Michigan wide receivers coach. I guess he is also now kind of getting in the mix for the Central Michigan head coaching job. Now, Dan Enos once left the head coach at Central Michigan to be SEC offensive coordinator. So I don't know which job McElwain would necessarily think was better, Central Michigan head coach or Tennessee OC. But the guy that at one point been rumored to be Pruitt's replacement as offensive coordinator may be going to interview for the Central Michigan job. And then speaking of Tennesseans' offensive coordinator search, the chatter is intensifying that indeed Tennessee may have done more than just considered Hugh Freeze. There's some online talk that they may have actually talked to Hugh Freeze. This may be one of those trial balloons to see how the public responds to that after it kind of blew up in Nick Saban's face not too long ago in terms of trying to bring in Freeze even as an analyst at that point in time. He's obviously a superior play caller. This would be a real big development if Tennessee is able to get the political capital it needs to hire Hugh Freeze as offensive coordinator's replacement for Tyson Helton. That is a story worth watching. For now, though, we'll have to make that your SEC through. And here on Underdog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, we're obviously talking a lot about Georgia and Alabama on the field on Saturday, but regardless of the win or the loss, there is a lot to discuss in terms of what the playoff implications are going to be for this game once it's over. And I mentioned this yesterday. I think it's really interesting how different the conversation is on ESPN as opposed to everywhere else. Now, I've talked about, you know, ESPN bias in favor of Alabama before. Maybe this is an ESPN bias in favor of Georgia. What I think it is just kind of an ESPN bias in favor of drama for the selection process. And be careful about being drawn off sides by this. First of all, if you watch Road to Atlanta driven by Cadillac earlier in the week, you heard Kirk Herbstreit. Herbstreit is emphatic that he thinks that Georgia, even with a close loss to Alabama on Saturday, could still very much be in the mix for a playoff spot as a two-loss team. Here's a little sampling of what Herbstreit said on TV about that.
If you're going to sit here and be honest, how can we not say that Georgia is one of the top four teams in the country right now, heading into this weekend? Is there anybody that would dispute that Georgia is one of the top four teams in the country based on what we've seen. Now, I know they went to Baton Rouge. It did not go well. But what they've done since then and the way they played, Swift is healthy in the backfield, the way Fromm has been playing in complete command, I'm simply stating a case that if they compete against this team that we're all bowing down to, Alabama, and if they lose by 10, then it's not a story. But if it's a last-second field goal or it's back and forth, and like the game they had about 3 or 4 years ago where Georgia and Alabama are playing and Georgia gets the ball and they're driving and they just ran out of time at about the two-yard line, talking about a game like that where you want to see more, that's where I think the committee would really still have to evaluate.
Herb Street actually went into more detail about what it was the committee would be evaluating and kind of a pushback against some non-SEC fans, certainly non-UGA fans, who doesn't think Georgia would belong. Here's more from Herb Street.
What the common fan would say is, Georgia's out, two losses, they're gone. What you have to be careful of, that's your way of evaluating, not the committee's way of evaluating. I'm just trying to throw that out there as a potential kind of an asterisk when you're watching the SEC championship. Do not be swayed away from Georgia if they play really well and compete. I still think that they would have an argument. What if Ohio State got to play Alabama? Or what if Oklahoma got to play Alabama? And Georgia got to play Northwestern? Or Georgia got to go play Texas? Would we put down Oklahoma for playing, having to go play Alabama if they played really well and it came down to that final play? Would you look at Oklahoma and say, oh, no, you lost. That's too. No, you would look at Oklahoma like, oh, my gosh, you were right there against the best team in the country. How are you going to lose ground for going toe-to-toe with the best team in the country?
So that's obviously a strong argument in favor of Georgia. It is worth pointing out that Herb Street will be one of the figures on that selection committee show. Maybe he's got a vested interest in generating interest in the broadcast. I thought it was interesting, though, that Brad Nessler, who will call the game on CBS, when he joined us on our show yesterday, the optimism that Herb Street seems to have about Georgia's chances of making the playoff as a two-loss team, it's safe to say that Brad Nessler doesn't necessarily share in that enthusiasm.
If Georgia loses this game, they're probably not going to be in. You know, a lot of other things would have to happen, and for that to occur, Texas would have to beat Oklahoma pretty good, and Northwestern would have to beat Ohio State. That's still a possibility.
I mean, you can do all that with what you will. I just wanted to make sure we presented both sides of the argument from two very respected voices, Nessler on the one side, Herb Street on the other. I guess my opinion is this. The one thing that I do slightly disagree with Mr. Nessler on is that I don't think that Texas would have to beat Oklahoma. He said pretty good. I think Oklahoma, even in a win, not looking good, giving up a lot of points, could open up some room for debate, and any kind of loss by Oklahoma, I think, would be a very difficult case for them to make for being in the playoff. And Texas lost to Maryland. I don't even want to hear about that. I think an Oklahoma loss simply eliminates the Big 12 from discussion here, which obviously would be good news for Georgia in the event it suffers a loss. And on the Ohio State side of things, I take a lot of interest in the fact that the committee only had Ohio State at 6 this past week. I think that Ohio State has got to do a lot of work to get into that playoff conversation. Maybe there's a bad taste in the mouths of a lot of people because of the off-field turmoil around Ohio State. I can't really speak to that right now. But being at 6, that's a lot of ground to cover when you only are playing Northwestern, the kind of game, even in a blowout, that might not give a whole lot of credibility to the Ohio State cause here. So I think what happens on Saturday, hopefully it's a Georgia win, but in the event of a close loss, we'll see if the Dogs can stay in the mix. So a lot to cover here over the course of the next couple days. Road to Atlanta Live, driven by Cadillac, 5 p.m. today. We're looking forward to talking more about that. And then, of course, all of our coverage tomorrow. And by the way, it's not just here with Dog Nation. It's also our family of stations around WSB. They're going to be doing some great stuff as well. AM 750 WSB and News 95.5, the only place to hear our Georgia folks calling the game. Of course, kickoff at 4 p.m. Pre-game coverage begins 4 hours before that. I'm talking about the great former Georgia quarterback Eric Zier, our buddy Kevin Butler, Scott Howard, the voice of the Dogs. You can hear that tomorrow on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Then please check out the Action New Channel 2's Night Beat at 11 p.m. Saturday night. Hear clips and interviews from Georgia coaches and players' reaction to the game. You can see that on TV on WSB TV Channel 2. I will also say this, as Georgia's riding high, don't forget, Gator haters, 762 days since Florida's beaten Georgia. That's good news. We're hoping for more this weekend. We'll see you Monday here on Dog Nation Daily.